Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, the Ailish Hour. You can listen to our previous 3 hours with JD and myself. We had some great guests on. Dan Shulman gave us lots of Blue Jays info, so if you're looking for that, that's hour three. Today, we got some great guests on the Ailish Hour, as always. My producer, Danielle, just killing it for me. Appreciate that. Before we get into our first guest, Julia Kreutz, we got to talk about last night in MLB. So, obviously, lots of new players making their debut around the league. It's never easy to fly in, meet the team, get the chemistry going, get in front of a fan base. Here's a great way to get your jersey sales up and get the fan base to fall in love with you, which Brandon Drury did last night.
Drury to left field. Connor Joe going back. Brandon Drury now plays. It's Slam Diego. Brandon Drury in his first debut in a Padres uniform hits a grand slam. Why? Because he's in Slam Diego.
Slam Diego. I love it. Slammed in Drury. It's another one. First ever pitch as a Padre. Grand slam. That is probably one of the greatest debuts from a player hitting a new team. Juan Soto and Josh Bell walked at their first at-bats, and Brandon Drury hits the grand slam. Pretty fun stuff happened.
Slam Diego!
Slam Diego. I love it. That's a good drop to have. But it got me thinking of some of the best sports debuts that we've seen, whether that's as a rookie entering the scene or whether that's joining a new team. Similar situations. You got the nerves. You got the expectations. Nobody really knows you yet. So text in 590-590 some of the best sports debuts that you remember. Of course, I got to play mine, which is at the top of the list. October 12th, 2016. This is what happens.
Nylander gets it in front of the net. Holland trying to get untangled. Puck rolls around. Matthews scores. Trying to find some room. Oh, great work. He gets free. Shoots, scores. What a goal. Matthews, magnificent. He says it doesn't matter what league you're coaching in. That's been his experience. Puck out in front. Matthews scores. A hat trick. Oh, my. Just missing with Bobby Ryan. He's got one. Had a great chance at two. Leafs back quickly. Nylander moving in. Works it across in front. He scores! Matthews! You are looking at the first player ever to score four goals in an NHL debut.
Wow. Like, just listening to that gave me the chills. I remember watching that thinking, oh, this guy's going to be good. Like, you know, first overall pick, but let's see what he's got. Four goals in his debut, becoming the first player in modern era to do such a thing. That's pretty incredible. I remember actually a small brag, which ends up not being one. My debut as a professional hockey player for the Markham Thunder. I also scored in my professional hockey debut. We won 6-0. I think my goal was the sixth goal, which zero importance in the outcome of the game. But I have fans, friends, family. So a pretty fun way to kick off your career. However, I did not do much for the rest of the season, but I started off with a bang, just like Matthews, minus three of those goals. Okay. Text in 590-590. I already see some coming in about best debuts in sports. Here's somebody making their debut on my show, The Ailish Hour, Julia Kreutz, MLB.com contributor. And she's always on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So disclaimer, I had to speak to Blake Murphy to ask the correct pronunciation of your last name, because as somebody with an Ailish forefar name, I know that it is not easy to live in the world that we live in with unique names. So I nailed it.
You absolutely did. And honestly, I just, I really appreciate you going out and getting the information. That's huge. Thank you very much.
Are you one of those people that you just like, you don't even correct people at this point? You're like, yep, Cruz. Yeah, that's me.
Pretty much. And let me tell you, you know, growing up in Brazil, it's not like people down there are getting it right either. So I've heard a lot of different pronunciations on my last name. I kind of just go with it at this point.
I love it. Well, we're in the same boat. I get eyelash, English, Alicia. So anyway, I won't make that mistake. So let's talk some Blue Jays. Obviously, we've been all over that the last couple of days. We'll just start broad. For you, how do you begin to evaluate what the Blue Jays did and didn't do at the trade deadline? Now, a couple days later, we've had a chance to kind of flesh through it all.
Yeah, honestly, Alicia, I think that there was a big gap that needed to be bridged here, and the trade deadline was a good opportunity for the Blue Jays to do that. And I don't think that they did. When you look at what other American League contenders did at the deadline, the New York Yankees somehow getting even better, and the Mariners now on an absolute tear and really closing in on the Blue Jays for that first wild card spot, going out and getting Luis Castillo, who was the best starter on the market. The Blue Jays didn't address some of the biggest gaps that they needed to address on their roster, namely starting rotation and maybe the strikeout potential in the bullpen. Now, and then Ross Stripling hitting the IL, it doesn't really help their case either. Yeah, you know, and there was a chance to maybe go out and get a starter sort of tied that way, but it just didn't happen. So obviously the Blue Jays are a better team now than they were before the trade deadline, but is it enough to get them to a deep postseason run this year?
It doesn't really inspire much confidence when the conversations leading up to the trade deadline were that they were going to be aggressive, that they were going to be in on these conversations, which we always hear. They were second place. They were runners up, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. So I think that actually adds to a little bit of disappointment or a feeling of wanting that the Blue Jays fans have. So when we look around what the trades were completed, especially in like the AL here, was there another deal that you saw that you thought, wow, the Blue Jays really should have been on that? They had a comparable package in terms of prospects, and that would have been a good fit. That kind of left you thinking, well, what was the reasoning that they weren't involved?
Yeah, I think that the Frankie Montas deal would have made a lot of sense for the Blue Jays, but I think it all comes down to sort of a willingness to part with certain prospects. You know, guys like Gabriel Moreno or Elvis Martinez probably would have had to be included in a deal for a guy like Montas, who has been having a career season and could really help a starting rotation. So, and we know that the Yankees also got another pitcher or reliever there in that deal too. So, you know, kind of sure that package was a little bit more hefty because of that. But, you know, when you look back at how the season started for the Blue Jays and the way that everyone around this organization talked about the goal of making a World Series this year, it just, it doesn't seem to fit with the approach that we saw at the deadline. You know, if there isn't a willingness to sort of give up these top prospects in order to win now, then what was that speech at the beginning of the year all about?
I totally agree. And we talked about this at length with a lot of people that are high up on prospects in terms of knowledge. And I'm not one of those people, but the understanding that I have is that the Blue Jays prospect system and their depth isn't as valuable as we probably had predicted. They have, you know, some incredible top guys. Obviously, Gabriel Moreno has basically been rated 1 to 5 in everybody's rankings, but not a lot of depth past the top three. Is that something that you circle as being a bigger issue than maybe we had put any substance on during our conversations now after the trade deadline, kind of realizing that, ooh, that's something that we should have had addressed over the last year or two?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think that that's a little bit a product of the major league team getting as good as it is now. And it's not, it's not so recent that the Blue Jays are going out and making trades. You know, they had to give up a first round pick to get Jose Barrios. They had to give up a bunch of guys to get Matt Chapman. Mm-hmm. And that really will deplete a farm system, obviously. And we saw after their run in 2015 and 16 too, that coming out of that, the minor league system was very much depleted. There wasn't a lot of long-term talent there. So yes, that is understandable. And I agree that there might be a lack of depth in the Blue Jays minor league system, but that's also why, you know, a big part of why prospects exist and they are there. It's for making those transactions happen. And the Blue Jays certainly did have the talent to make big deals happen at the deadline based on their minor league system. Now, what would happen to that system after those deals and after those guys had left probably wouldn't have been pretty. But yeah, the talent was there, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder your take on this narrative that I've seen surrounding the exact conversation that we're having, is that maybe the Blue Jays thought, well, the window maybe it isn't here now because the Yankees got so much better and they're running away with the division and the Astros got better. And then you look across, the Mariners at least adding. Do you think that there's some substance to that in terms of, well, maybe we just hold on a bit and that this isn't the trailer in the movie season and maybe that is a little bit further away?
That's an interesting take, and one that I hadn't heard, to be honest with you.
Well, I get too deep in the Twitter feed, okay?
No, but that's a good point, you know, and it's something that we should probably consider. I mean, do the Blue Jays realistically have a chance this year? What I will say is this. Would anyone have said last year that the Atlanta Braves had a real chance of winning a World Series? That's the beauty and sort of the weirdness of baseball, is that if you get into the playoffs, if you get into the postseason, you have a chance. If your team clicks at the right time, you should be okay and you should have an opportunity. We've seen so many teams like the Yankees this year that crash and burn when the postseason comes for any reason. It could be injury. It could just be a bad night or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily convinced that that's the case for the Blue Jays. And I also don't think that the front office believes that because, you know, if you Mark Shapiro, when he was unveiling the renovations at Rogers Center, started his speech by saying, I hope that the renovation that we're not talking about here is that we're going to add another banner, right? Another World Series banner to this ballpark. Mm-hmm. The conviction that this team can win World Series is very much still there. And I honestly believe that as long as this team has this core, the window is open for them.
Yes, I certainly agree. And I don't think that the chance has slipped away, but it certainly feels like a little bit of a bigger hill to climb, especially with what other people are doing around the league. So we did get some new players to talk about. Whit Merrifield, for sure, an interesting one. If and when he can play for this team, obviously with the vaccination status just up in the air, letting him decide, which I thought was somewhat of an interesting move, just depending on him being clearly unvaccinated and letting him just be the guy that makes that decision anyway. So where do you think he fits in the roster, as like he's been, you know, talked about as like kind of a utility guy? Like, where are you expecting his impact to be and where he'll probably shake out here, knowing that maybe George Springer is also up in the air?
Right. So I think that's the big question mark right now, is how much can George Springer play in the regular season and beyond? So it has been an issue with the elbow and everything, and I am sure that that played a part in the Blue Jays going out and getting Whit Merrifield. But his appeal is that he can slide into the outfield, but he can also play infield. So he's a guy that sort of provides you with a little bit of flexibility, and we know that the Blue Jays are big on versatility right now. And, you know, when you look at the Blue Jays infield, they are pretty much set, but it is good to have an extra option if you want to give a guy like Santiago Espinal the day off, or even Bo Bichette, who's been playing a whole lot. You know, Espinal can play shortstop, Merrifield can slide in at second. There are multiple ways to get Merrifield to contribute every day, and that is what the Blue Jays expect of him. Ross Atkins does see him as an everyday player, with the caveat that he may only play half the games from now until the end of the season because he is not he has not taken the vaccine just yet. We know that he did say that he was open to getting the vaccine were he playing for a contender, which did not endear him to Kansas City Royals fans at the time. But it is kind of an awkward trade when you think about it. The fit might make sense, but the overall context is very, very awkward.
Mm-hmm. I certainly agree, and that will be a thing to consider because apparently the quickest that he could play is 2 weeks. There's some major homestands coming up, so it would be tough to know, I guess, if he's going to be able to do the Canadian side of the games. We're going to see. I'm assuming we'll see him soon on the road here. So at least we'll get a taste of what he can and hopefully will bring to the Blue Jays. So also yesterday, kind of finding out more about the hiccups that the Jays are facing was Ross Stripling hitting that 15-day IL with a glute, a hip type of strain. So probably going to see a new face this weekend, Mitch White, who has been kind of talked about as a Ross Stripling-esque player as well, someone that can be a bit of a hybrid pitcher. So are we, in your opinion, going to see something that will impress? What are your takes on just what Mitch White might be able to bring to this team?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty funny, actually, how similar those deals are. And considering that they were both made with the Los Angeles Dodgers, I personally am very curious to see Mitch White, a guy like that, who kind of flew under the radar for a little bit. But again, with how much the Blue Jays value versatility and how much they need a guy that can play that hybrid role right now, which was Ross Stripling before Hyunjin Ryu hit the IL for the rest of the year. It certainly makes sense. It's not maybe the sexiest deal, for lack of a better word, but it does make sense with what they're trying to do. Now, Mitch White is a guy that, you know, he still has a lot to prove, and he's a very young guy. He has several years of team control, and I'm sure that played a factor in the Blue Jays going out and getting him to maybe more of a midterm deal than a short-term one, and the pitcher that Pete Walker can work with and really turn into someone that the Blue Jays will find a valuable piece for years to come. And yeah, I honestly, it's hard to tell what to expect from a guy like that in his first outing with a new team, but I'm certainly excited to see it. And if it turns out, you know, half as well as the Ross Stripling did for the Blue Jays, I think that they'll be really happy.
Well, we just talked about off the top Brandon Drury's new debut with the new team, and he got a grand slam in his first at bat. So maybe Mitch White has something to prove as well and comes in hot.
Slam Diego.
That's our new kicker. Maybe he's got something this weekend when he's going to be pulled in a little bit quicker than maybe expected. But a lot of this rides on Kikuchi continuing to bounce back from his time off and the corrections that he's made. Last night, he had definitely a better outing than we've seen, at times. Did that raise a little bit of confidence level for you in terms of him getting back to the Kikuchi of All-Star Kikuchi?
Yeah, that's something that we spoke to him about after his first start when he came back from the IL, and that was just phenomenal, right? That was stellar Kikuchi at play. And one thing that he said was that for him, he is so hard on himself that sometimes it's hard to sort of get out of your own head in the middle of the game when you start making mistakes. So when he was down in Buffalo and rehabbing his neck strain, other than working on the mechanical and physical side of the game, learning a new arm slot, learning a new slider grip, he was also working really hard on the mental aspect of the game and sort of letting go a little bit of trying to be perfect and trying to, turn the page a little bit quickly, if you will. And then yesterday, you kind of get a regression a little bit, you know? He was really dominant for three innings, fourth inning runs around, and he is walking guys, and he is surrendering loud contact and hitting batters. And so how much can you trust Yusei Kikuchi to be consistent? I think that he is taking really important steps in the right direction, but at the same time, it's not a finished product or a done deal yet. And then when you think about Ross Stripling hitting the IL, that adds a lot of pressure to the top three guys in this rotation who have been phenomenal. Gausman, Manoah, and Berríos certainly recently has been very good. But that's a lot of pressure on three guys. And maybe that's a little bit of a taste of what the postseason will bring, because certainly the Blue Jays will be counting a lot on those, on that top three of the rotation come October as well.
For sure. I think the pitching has always been a conversation. Obviously getting some relief was the conversation around the trade deadline, and now the starting pitching having some more question marks with what Ross Stripling will do over the next 15 days, and if Kikuchi can continue his upward progression are some things to circle. One last thing. What about the offense right now? I feel like we've seen players that are not expected to be the top guys performing, and then we're seeing the top guys have some big outbreaks. What is it that the Blue Jays need to continue to find some consistency throughout their lineup? And is that just like timing for you? Is it something that should be and addressed with, you know, the way that the lineup is structured? Is that something that concerns you at all, or are we just focused on pitching right now?
No, if you talk to any ball player, Ailish, they'll tell you that there are ebbs and flows to the baseball season when it comes to hitting. Mm-hmm. This Blue Jays lineup is A, too athletic, and B, just plainly too talented to slump for long. That said, it's maybe a little bit comforting to see John Schneider's approach of aggressiveness on the base paths, for example, as a way to sort of counter this tough period for the offense. It's also good to see a guy like Matt Chapman,
for sure,
who has been unlucky, you know, most of the year, and then talks about staying patient while still making minor tweaks to his mechanics at the plate. So this team has been through it all at this point. We know that the offense was very slow to start the year. And I think that what they have going for them right now that maybe they didn't in the past is that experience of, we can go through these tough times, but we don't need to panic. We don't need to change too much or try to do too much. We saw frustration mount, especially with guys like Bichette and Guerrero, at the beginning of the season when the offense was not going. And I think that the big difference now is that we're not going to see that same level of panic and that same level of desperation. Maybe players will have a little bit more of an Alejandro Kirk approach, who is also struggling to start the year, but was still getting on base at a pretty impressive clip. You know, it's the patience. It's trying to take what you're given. And when you look at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night, just slapping singles to the opposite field, not trying to do too much, right? So maybe that's the sort of the bright spot to keep in mind as they go through this, maybe this rough patch or however you want to put it. But the Blue Jays are just simply too talented, and there's a lot of power there that I don't think that a slump like this will last for too long.
I agree. I think the Blue Jays have all the tools. They just need to have them clicking at the same time. They have, you know, we at one point the best offense in baseball. At one point, you know, the best, some of the best pitchers contributing at the same time. So it's all about putting those puzzle pieces together. And I think you're right. The experience of having to go through the ups and downs, especially with a young team, can only, you know, solidify that you can do that when it matters in the postseason. So appreciate you coming on, Julia, and we'll chat with you soon. Hopefully we'll have some really good Blue Jays news to chat about.
Absolutely. Have a great day, and thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. No problem. Julia Kreutz, MLB.com, contributor at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. She's always around here. Lots of shows. Check out her Twitter feed. Check out her writing. She's great. Great insight. Appreciate her coming on. We have Cynthia Freeland after the break, NFL Network. We have lots of texts in the text line about some debuts. David Ayers, the best NHL debut of all time. Okay, well, that one's just a stab in the heart, okay? Whoever texted that in, you're looking for chaos this morning. I was actually at that game as a fan. Really excited to watch the Leafs. You don't always get to go to home games. You know, my friend took me. So I didn't have to pay the exorbitant prices. And we certainly saw a game I will never, ever forget. And luckily enough for us, we were seated behind the Carolina Hurricanes net. So we were watching this unfold, thinking, like, what's going on here? Like, who are they going to put in? And just hanging out. And then this guy skates out with no name on the back of his jersey. But at that point, I was at Ryerson University, now Toronto Metropolitan University, where I was a player and a coach. And David Ayers was a attendee at the arena, as we all know. So I knew David Ayers. I said, I know that guy. Like, I'm pretty sure I know him from Ryerson. And my friend Kate, who I was with, was like, no way. Like, that's not right. And then I go on Twitter, and it's, yeah, David Ayers, Zamboni driver, Ryerson University. So I had like a little bit extra vested interest in how that went because I knew him, and then I saw him like around the rink for the next year, and he was quite the celebrity. So thanks for texting that one in. That is an incredible debut. Not sure we're going to see something like that again. And quite a few texts, 590, 590 about JP Arencibia's debut with the Jays in 2010. First at bat, a 2-run home run, then a double, a single, and capped it off with a solo shot. That was from Andre in Toronto, but a bunch of you also texted that one in. That's a great Jays related one. Brings some good feelings back up. Arencibia, 4 or 5 texts from that. And then Jeremy from Meaford says, in 1989, Junior Felix hit the first MLB pitch he saw for a home run for the Jays. So the Jays have a little magic as well with these first at-bats. So certainly that's going to be something we're going to be looking at when Mitch White makes his debut sometime in the near future. And then, yes, 2 texts here about Austin Matthews' 4 goals. We played that one off the top. That's got to be the top one for me. This is all inspired by Brandon Drury hitting a grand slam off his first pitch last night. So keep those coming, 590, 590 in the text line. We're going to take a break, talk about some NFL. There's a NFL game tonight. Everybody, sound the alarms. You can bet on NFL tonight. Not a regular season game, of course, but a game nonetheless. Let's talk about that with our next guest, Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, The Ailish Hour. Subscribe, download, and rate 5 stars for our podcast on the Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. The guest brings all the happiness and the fun vibes. It's Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I saw that it was Tom Brady's 45th birthday last night. What's your favorite memory from that guy? Were you celebrating? How does one go about such a monumental day?
Well, the funny part is, you know, the very first Super Bowl that I ever got a chance to attend was a pretty crazy Tom Brady Super Bowl. It was the Atlanta Falcons game. So I think people will remember that from Houston. It was quite the comeback. So that was probably my favorite, you know, observing Tom Brady. And it was also quite special because it was the first time I ever got a chance to go to the Super Bowl, too.
That's a pretty special one. I think that one goes down as one of the best of all time. If we were doing power rankings, we'll have to get you back on that one time. But there's a football game tonight, and the vibes are high here. As you can tell, I play you in with a fun song. We've been talking about that that game tonight. I know it's not, you know, a real season game, but we got the Jaguars and the Raiders kicking off tonight in the NFL Hall of Fame game, which is so exciting for all of us that have been waiting just to see something of NFL action. What do the coaches see out of these games? I know there's like no starters playing. I don't think the Jaguars have their first 2 quarterbacks in the lineup. Is there actually tangible pieces of information that coaches are looking for just to kind of get the rust off?
Yeah, well, getting the rust off, I think the process is probably the thing that they look to the most, like their game day process, right? Like the warm, the this, the that, you know, the, all the different ways that they get ready for games. You know, these are two new coaches for teams, or not teams, but teams that are with new coaches. So they ultimately, they're looking to see, okay, let's get the, like, the communication right. Let's get our, like, it's a dress rehearsal so that we know exactly how we're going to operate come regular season. Some positions do play, like the offensive linemen will play, and certain rotational positions. You'll see some of the, like, later round draft picks. They'll, and by the way, many of them become major contributors. So there are some things we can glean from it. I wouldn't look to things for, like, you know, too much on formations or who's going to be great this year. I think it's more about, you know, who are these role players and how are we going to get these guys with some extra snaps in there, and how does Coach McDaniel want to do it? How does Coach Peterson want to do it, you know, in this particular setting in the season?
I do love the narrative. Oh, sorry. Did you go? Was that, I thought I heard some feedback, but we're all good. So we're good. I think we're getting you fine. Okay, so both are new coaches. I think that that's a really intriguing storyline tonight. Let's start with Doug Peterson and his Jaguars. So first preseason game here. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence isn't in the lineup, but what are the steps that he needs to take forward this year in year two, and what are the expectations from him?
The good thing I like most about Doug Peterson is if you look back to how he handled Carson Wentz many years ago in Philadelphia, it was about spreading the ball around. Carson Wentz had the most different receivers, the most different, like, people who had actually caught touchdown passes in that season. So using all of your different assets to help you create different looks and make it simple for the quarterback, but also make it complicated for the defense. There's a fine balance between how simple for the QB and how, like, tricky for the opposing defenses. And that's what Doug Peterson was really masterful at with Carson Wentz. So I think that's what we'll look to see him do again this season, especially given all of their offseason moves.
So on the other side, another head coach getting his debut, Josh McDaniels, as you said, coming over from New England. What are the expectations with this group? Because I think that there's a lot of new weapons. Derek Carr is going to have some faces that are new and some faces that are familiar. What do you evaluate with Vegas' season ahead in terms of what we should expect as fans and as maybe sports bettors for what they're going to be able to contribute to?
I love the Raiders. I think they've gotten a lot closer, but I don't necessarily think that they're going to be measured in wins, either with the Jags either. I think the Raiders are in the most difficult division in all of football. They have a very questionable O-line, and I think that it's not going to be, you know, it's not Super Bowl. They don't have Super Bowl ceiling this year, in my opinion. I think they don't have the defensive backs, and the interior O-line especially is dicey at best. And you have all these weapons, and you also have a punishing schedule. The Raiders are ridiculously difficult. And Josh McDaniels, known for a more complicated system on offense, even the same plays are kind of run a little bit differently according to players who have played for him. So when I look at this, I'm like, all right, you'll have a good, you know, fantasy season for Devontae and for Hunter Renfrow and, of course, for Darren Waller. But, you know, when it comes to the thing that matters, which is wins, like, the start of their schedule is, like, I looked at them like, this is not going to be good for anyone. Like, this is very difficult for even the best team. So, you know, I think that people should temper their expectations on, you know, what, how many wins they get in a season. But I think they should be mindful that it's a huge step forward, and they're a lot closer. There's some defensive backs and interior O-linemen away from being an amazing team.
Well, I will say that having a tough schedule at the beginning might, you know, if you get through that all right, you got a little bit of confidence, you propel yourself a little bit further, but it can also be a pretty devastating start if you, you know, you feel like you're out of it already. But one team that, I mean, I feel like they've really got a lot of pressure on them this season. We're up here in Bills country, basically, right on the border. You were down at the Bills preseason, and you've seen them up close and personal. Do they look like the Super Bowl winning team that they're currently predicted to be based on the betting odds, at least?
You know, I think the Bills' expectations are warranted. I'm going to be up there Monday, and then I'm doing preseason again for them. So the 13th, the 20th, home games, and then an away game at, actually, a really interesting preseason game 3 at Carolina. You know, Baker Mayfield, Darnold, what's going to happen? But I think the Bills, when I look to see their team, the pieces that they added, you don't add Von Miller to this already if you don't think that will put you over the top. So I'm very excited to see when I go up close and personal again this next preseason games, especially, like I said, preseason game three, the one where at least some of the starters will show you. I want to see if Tre'Davious White is back to being healthy. That's a huge deal. I want to see how they handle their slot receiver situation, because last year not having Cole Beasley perform up to standards was a big problem. And now it seems like, I mean, early in camp, Isaiah McKenzie has stood out in that role. But remember, they also have Jamison Crowder and they have Khalil Shakir, who they drafted in order to fill that slot role. So Stephon Diggs can spread the field. Gabe Davis can be that nasty number two threat. And now you address the slot and you have Dawson Knox. Like, okay. Talking about something really special this season. So, you know, I think the Bills have done a really nice job. I don't want to jinx anyone by saying anything, but I will tell you that week one out, I live in Los Angeles, and week one out here in LA against SoFi or at SoFi against the Rams, I think that's going to be a very interesting, if you can start strong, then the Super Bowl could be a very serious and very real and very tangible situation. Obviously, everyone needs to stay healthy, too.
Yes, so staying healthy, that's a question mark right now. Jordan Poyer, his injury, he got carted off the field with an elbow injury, which to me is a bit alarming. How is that possibly going to affect the team and maybe that pending contract that he's in discussions with?
Let's just see what happens. I would imagine, you know, look, this early in training camp, he's a veteran. He doesn't need to, you know, not to say that he doesn't need to practice, but he knows what the playbook looks like. Leslie Frazier has been very, you know, good to him and taught him well. So I think they're probably, hopefully, being overly cautious with the situation. But I, you know, obviously Jordan Poyer, that two safety shell, that combination of him and Micah Hyde, remember Micah had injuries earlier this week as well, but he's okay. That is the key to this season, because those AFC quarterbacks, all of them, they have monster splits. They're very different when they face man versus zone. So if you can get that two safety shell, and by the way, most teams now, our base defense is a nickel defense, meaning five defensive backs. So you're not necessarily seeing as many bases that's just, you know, four playing man coverage, et cetera. So the importance of the safety, especially those two safeties, it can't be understated. So to see what happens, like those two are a monstrous key to the season.
Oof. And you mentioned quarterbacks there, like Josh Allen, you know, one of the, arguably we have these conversations all the time, best quarterback in the league this year, top three, top five. It's hard to place him at times, but last year he was absolutely incredible for the Buffalo Bills. But how much more can he do, and how much more is he going to be asked to do this year around for the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I'm excited to see. So people are like okay, is it good that Brian Daboll left? Because that means that now you'll see some new looks and defenses are going to have to be very, you know, mindful, because there's going to be, you know, just different set of looks and different set of plays. And then, you know, some people are like, oh no, it's a bad thing because, you know, that was the guy who made Josh Allen great. And I would say it's probably like a little bit of both, right? Brian Daboll taught Josh Allen how to be a great professional. And now Josh Allen gets to carry that torch with a new set of people orchestrating different plays for him. Remember, Joe Brady is a part of that staff. Joe Brady, who was at LSU, Joe Brady, they spread the ball around a ton. So it's going to be interesting to see all the different ways that they add things specific to the talent that Josh Allen has. I think Josh Allen has evolved enough where he doesn't need Brian Daboll to be his, like, very first teacher. I think it's going to be a nice, you know, it's a nice combination for him. I fall on the side of, you know, like, let's see what Josh can do. If he's quarterback number one versus number three, I'm going to go ahead and say it doesn't matter. As long as he's one through three, it's going to be just fine, because that defense is something very, very special. So the combination of the complementary aspect of football will get some play there as well. And they've even started to add some folds to the run game that are a little bit different this year. So, you know, is he number quarterback two or quarterback three or quarterback? Like, who is? It's marginal you get to that status.
I know, and reports obviously got my eyes tightly on the Bills training camp here, but reports are that things are looking really good. Like, you know, the chemistry is still there. You said the defense is looking even better. That's all positive news for our Bills fans that are listening. So lots of excitement on the field, especially to come tonight, but down the road. But those major storylines that have dominated the NFL news cycle has been, you know, not great. Deshaun Watson, the Miami Dolphins scandals. But we'll start with Deshaun Watson news. So yesterday, the NFL appealed that 6-game suspension, and now they're seeking a tougher penalty, which obviously is a good step. But what is going to happen next from this point legally? And is it something you expect to be an accepted appeal?
The second part, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. The first part, so there's several steps to the process where, you know, the NFLPA and the NFL have a setup. So basically Roger Goodell, he or someone he designates to be the kind of best and final, like it's like, this is what we're doing. And they have a couple of days to review that. And then the NFLPA could, and very, what I'm hearing, very likely will then take the issue to the regular courts. Remember, when we say the process right now, this is a legally agreed upon, essentially arbitration. Mm-hmm. It's contracts are written between like a union and an employer, that this is, they're following that next procedure step by step. But remember, you can always go outside to like the actual court of the United States, right? So, you know, that would be a major step. I am hearing that depending on the length of the suspension, that could be something that the NFLPA does seek to take it to a, you know, a federal court, which mm-hmm. can be very messy as well. So the next steps in the process are basically, we will hear from, you know, just to overly simplify it, is we will hear from Roger Goodell and or someone he designates to be the person to create the final word, to have the final say, and then the NFLPA will have a chance to take it to, you know, actual court, not mm-hmm. the NFL. So that's probably what's up next.
Do you think that the appeal and what the news was out of yesterday is sending enough of a message with the severity of the situation? Is that a big enough step forward, or is there still expectations that there can be more and there should be more done?
I'll be honest with you, until the Houston Texans also have to be mm-hmm. held accountable for this, and I am not sure if behind closed doors of the league office there's punishments being talked about for the Texans, but I think the Texans are completely complicit in this entire process. I think they should be held accountable for, you know, basically enabling this and obscuring the potential, like, of justice of what's going on. The lack of their, you know, the way that they handled this was disgusting. The whole thing, absolutely gross. And I don't know if we'll get to a satisfying answer, because I don't know if we'll ever know, like, how, like, because the Texans did such disgusting things to hide it, and because all of these things seem, this is egregious, because there's so many women involved in this, and I'm not even sure if there's not more women in other states that just haven't come forward yet. So it's a horrible mess. It's incredibly unfortunate. I'm very disappointed in the Browns fans that are out there cheering for him, acting like he's some sort of hero. Mm-hmm. I think it's disgusting that the Browns paid him so much money. I really don't have a lot of positive things to say about that, which is not my that's not my personality usually at all, because, like, just please, everyone who's thinking about being a Browns fan, like, just go be a Bills fan. They're like a complete class act full of players who, you know, would never do that. You know, he's disgusting, and I don't know what the right punishment should be, but I know that this ain't it.
And I appreciate the honesty. You nailed it. It's disgusting. And I thought that those videos of fans like mobbing him with autographs is just, it's a really, really poor look on the fan base NFL wide. And yeah, it's just, it's and truly despicable. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. But the fact that John can't say he's sorry for anything mm-hmm. and finds no fault in anything that he did, like, that just makes it worse. Like, I don't even know if I think he's good enough to warrant, like, even us listening to him. Like, I just, so many people who do it the right way, and there's so many young men who take this opportunity to play football and to use it as a way to rise themselves out of horrible situations, and he just sullies all of it for everyone.
You put it perfectly. I couldn't agree more. Cynthia, I totally appreciate you taking your time today, getting all your insight, and we look forward to the season just right around the corner.
I can't wait to, for the happy, good football.
Yes.
Those shall not be named one in Ohio and one in Texas can both. All of their fans can become Bills fans, as far as I'm concerned.
I love it. I completely agree. We'll welcome them on the Bills Mafia bandwagon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Have a great day.
Thank you. That was Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network. She's a great follow, everybody, on Instagram, Twitter. She does an incredible job on TV. Really great guest. Appreciate that insight. And she put it bluntly and correctly in terms of all the Deshaun Watson garbage, basically, that's happening in the world. Yeah, great to have that perspective. We'll keep bringing you all the NFL action. As I said, there's a game tonight, everybody. You can actually bet on the game, which I think is funny. And also, I will be doing that because it's been much too long since I placed a irresponsible NFL bet with my gut. The Raiders are the favorites tonight. The Jaguars won't have their starting quarterback, their backup quarterback, in the lineup. You know, it's kind of a fun, messy game to watch, but nonetheless, a game to watch. So tune in tonight for that. I believe it's at 8 p.m. So Jays and that competing for your screen time tonight. It'll be really fun to get back into the NFL season. Oh, actually, the Jays play at noon. So that was yesterday. Too bad. The Jays play at 7:40. So a tough double screen night for our fans, but, you know, you got to pick maybe you get a split screen going on. A couple more texts in the text line about the best debut in sports. Owen Nolan's first game as a Leaf. 2 goals versus the Canucks. I thought he was the answer to our prayers. Jake from Kingston. That is a throwback. Owen Nolan. I once saw a vintage Owen Nolan St. Pat's striped jersey. I don't even know if that's like a real existing thing. A guy was wearing it in a store, and I almost went up to him to like buy it off his back because that's a beauty. Owen Nolan. I keep these coming. I know we won't get to all the texts, but I love the input in the text line every day. You guys are great. Speaking of great, wow, it's time for our feel-good story of the day. The greatest sport in the world.
But slam ball's back, baby.
Slam ball is back, baby. Oh, that's so good. We got Slam Ball is back. If you haven't seen Slam Ball, I don't know what's going on, okay? Stop what you're doing and take a look. Get a quick Google going. It's the best game ever. Huge air, big hits. It's like basketball with football and MMA on trampolines. It was iconic in the, I guess, early 2000s, mid-2010. I don't know when it really came out. 2010. I was a young pup, but I remember Slam Ball, okay? So the owner or the founder of Slam Ball had a little announcement last night on the 20th anniversary of Slam Ball.
This is the 20th anniversary of Slam Ball's national television debut. 20 years ago today, Slam Ball burst onto the television landscape, and we pressed a button in the culture that was never really unpressed. There have been all kinds of people clamoring for Slam Ball to come back. There's been hashtag bring back Slam Ball media viewed over 200 million times in the last 12 months. So I'm ready to announce that next summer, 2023, Slam Ball is coming back live, but Slam Ball's back, baby.
So Slam Ball back, baby. Mason Gordon, who was just speaking, gave a little bit of insight why they chose for this time to be the Slam Ball return. And it's kind of a sad look at our current society, because apparently the reasoning is because they're just short games and our attention span can no longer deal with 3-hour baseball games, and Slam Ball fits the bill with 20-minute games, quick little snippets of action. That is the approach, built for social media, as he says. People will love the highlights. If you remember, that's kind of the way that you got into Slam Ball, was those big dunks, those big hits. So that's a year away. We're going to have Slam Ball guests on for sure. No doubt about it. Can't wait to talk to the Slam Ball experts. Maybe I'll become one. That was it for the A-List Shower. Baby Friday. We'll see you tomorrow.